Hi, I'm Josh Miller, and this is Uncommon.
Hi, I'm Jay Saggers, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production by Neural, a full-service digital agency. If you want to grow with a premium agency and have the ability to work with Jordan directly, then learn more at neural.com/media and request a callback. That's neural.com/media.
My name's Jordan Michaelides, and I'm the host of Uncommon, a show that digs deep with unique individuals. If you like the episode, leave us a written review on your podcast app, as it helps us to continue what we do on a weekly basis. Show notes are below in your app. Otherwise, for all previous guests, you can find them at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. To watch the full video, just search Uncommon Show on YouTube to find our channel. Or if you want to keep up to date on social media, you can find us at Uncommon_Show on Instagram. With that being said, let's get into the episode. My guests this week are Josh Miller and G Saggers, two of the four co-founders of Soda Shades, which includes Steph Claire Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And Lukey Young. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Nice.
I was saying to you before in the kitchen, Aiden's given me some dirt. I've also found, I did find a few things. But
here we go.
Maybe we'll just start with like two true or false questions each to start.
Perfect.
And we'll go ladies first. Where does your, tie-dye obsession come from?
That's good.
That's very good.
I
did study fashion design, so possibly from there. I don't know, maybe it takes me back to my Perth beach roots, but mm-hmm. Aiden certainly had a lot of fun last weekend when I accidentally turned up in double matching tie-dye.
Yeah.
And then I'd been in the Gold Coast and he just spent the entire time lolling about the fact that I kept on going like this, and I was not meaning to do shakas. I was meaning to be like, this person called me. And he was like, why are you calling with a shaka phone?
Don't we all, like, that's, yeah, we all call
that's
like
the
that.
Universal.
That's the universal
call
symbol.
Yeah.
I guess there.
And the other thing was, who is the best cook at Supper Club thus far?
Unfortunately, Aiden. He can cook a mean pasta.
Okay.
And he really does it with, like, his Italian accent. He's 132 Italian. And he always reminds us of that fact. Definitely, okay. Aiden.
Now, Josh, this is a very important question that I need your help with to classify or clarify for my partner, because she's very against it. I hear that Steph is against it too.
Mm-hmm.
Is, true or false, is country music probably the best style of music out there?
Absolutely, 100% true.
Yeah. and how far up there is Florida Georgia Line?
I saw them live last year. They're good, but probably a little bit commercial for me, I think, as far as country music goes.
I've gone, like, really, really deep. I feel like 6 months ago I found some song, Florida Georgia Line, with Nelly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was sort of my gateway drug to getting into country music. Now
that's
I'm
good,
looking
isn't it?
At, what's that concert they have every year in Tennessee or...
Oh,
it's got this really strange... Before. It was really strange name.
I don't know the name, though.
The one that's been called off?
No. No.
It's not South by Southwest.
No. Yeah.
That was the thing that's that recorded.
Austin.
But this has been really bugging me because I forgot it all day long.
Yeah, I
should have just
it
looked
either.
It up. Anyway,
Josh is a big fan.
We'll get it at the end of the episode.
I plan on going there next year for my 30th, a bit of a road trip.
Okay.
Just all the little honky-tonk towns. And so, yeah, I'm all on it.
Yeah, I'm actually more interested now in the Midwest of America than any of the coast.
Mm.
So, the other thing I had to ask you was, do you still have Harley Davidson 48?
I do not.
You don't?
Sometimes.
I do not.
Why is that?
I grew up riding bikes my whole life, and when I got a bit more serious with work and couldn't afford injury, that being said, I was very lucky. I only broke my wrists a handful of times, but never actually anything else. So I got lucky as far as severe injury. But
Was that an insurance thing or literally a personal decision?
Nah,
like, this
personal.
Is not wise.
I mean, if I was injured, I couldn't work and couldn't, you know, repay the house and whatnot. So it was more of a mature decision to start riding. So I bought a Harley because I didn't want to, you know, race and jump dirt bikes anymore. And that was my fix temporarily. And then I unfortunately had a mate who lost his life in a motorcycle accident. So
wow.
Sitting there at that funeral was the last day I rode a bike.
Really?
Couldn't do it. Too young. He was 24 and sitting around that room was heavy. So
yeah.
I don't know what it was that day. I just said, that's it. I don't need to ride it anymore.
I can understand.
I can buy a car and buy an old car or something, but yeah.
Yeah. There was a guy that I went to school with that died at 19 for something similar. Mm. Yeah, it was a motorcycle accident, but yeah, you never, like, if you have something like that happen, you just will never want to touch it ever again.
That's the thing. It's like, I don't know, you almost feel a bit selfish riding a bike. That's how I looked at it. It's like everyone was affected because of, wasn't even his fault, but, you know, it affects so many people. Just because it's kind of cool to ride a bike or your own little, I don't know, kick or adrenaline. Yeah. It's like, you can do that other ways, so.
Yeah, you can. You can do it in other safe ways.
Like my boosted board. Yeah. There's other ways to do it. So, yeah, no, that was the end of the bike. That was maybe even 2 years now I've had another bike. So, yeah.
Wow. Now, I was looking at both your backgrounds. There's not much on you when it comes to your early years, but, you know, I know that you spent a lot of early years growing up at Bury.
Mm-hmm.
On holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I know you hail from Dubya, as you call it.
The great state.
The great state. What are both your earliest memories of childhood?
Well, mine, the way that, it's Bury, how you pronounce it, but way that Bury came about.
Yeah, we're debating that before you came in.
It's like beer in your eye. That's a good way to remember it.
Oh, that's a good way to remember.
Yeah.
Beer in
that
your
happens
eye.
A lot there too, so it's quite ironic.
Perfect.
The way that property came about was we, like I said before, grew up riding bikes and we used to go camping in Echuca along the river. And being little fellas on the bikes, we used to get done by the rangers all the time.
Okay.
So Dad back then always wanted a property on the Murray. And at that point, we're talking now 14, maybe 15 years ago, wanted to buy a place in Echuca but couldn't. So he ended up finding the place in Bury, which is about 50 minutes away. So we bought that prominently just to have a rural property on the river to camp and ride the bikes and not get in trouble.
Mm.
So that's how that came about. And my earliest memories were just camping on the river, riding bikes.
Why do you think he chose, why Echuca? Was that something that he just went to as a kid?
I think it was just such a predominant, I guess, family holiday camping destination not far from Melbourne. And it was, we were never beach family, we're always river and camping, so Echuca, I guess, was that place. I mean,
because we all have those areas, right? For me growing up in the Bayside, it was always like Mornington Peninsula, going to Sorrento Back Beach was like the pinnacle of the weekend.
So we never
life.
Did that, we never
see, we
never
were the opposite, we were a beach family. And when they first took me to the river, I was like, ugh.
It's dirty.
I was like, I won't be going in there. And Steph was like, come on, it's beautiful, clean water. And then when I take Steph, we took these guys down to where I grew up in Yelling Up down south, WA, and took Steph in the water. And she was like, it's beautiful, but I never grew up here, so I don't feel as comfortable as you do.
Yeah.
Whereas I just swim out and I don't even think of anything.
Yeah.
Whereas
it's
there,
quite funny,
I'm like,
it was like literally the opposite, hey, both of you guys.
Yeah.
She's like scared of the ocean, you're scared of the river.
So you grew up in Yelling Up.
So we grew up in Perth, like Claremont. My dad, my childhood memories are probably spent at a boys' boarding school because my dad was head of boarding.
Okay.
So we spent 11 years living on site in a boys' boarding house.
Really?
I did not know that.
Didn't you?
No.
Yeah, which was the best. I had the best childhood because my dad he's been there 38 years. He's their longest standing staff member.
Wow.
Is the hero of that school. He is the coolest man anyone will ever meet. He's so funny and so cool. And so we just grew up, I just had 180 brothers plus my own brother, which was amazing. And so we'd eat in the boys' dining room 3 mornings a week for breakfast. We'd go there for dinner. They'd go on excursions to like water parks and stuff and I'd get to go and take all my friends. It was the coolest thing ever. Had all my birthday parties at school. And then when I turned 13, the boys started being like, Mr. Saggers, we'll babysit. Yeah. And he was like, we're moving. Yeah. We're out. So, yeah, grew up there, but then we still have a property down in Yelling Up, so we spent every school holidays there. Mm. And it's just the best place ever. It's so quiet and beautiful.
You're still
and,
back there at every opportunity, huh?
Yeah, 5 minutes from the beach.
Perth is really nice. Lauren's cousin, he moved there from Tassie, like, 5-6 years ago. Mm. So he's now married, got a kid. We went for the wedding. Claremont's a great area. I can't remember, what's the area right near the beach on that?
Cottesloe?
Yeah, we stayed down at Cottesloe. Unfortunately, it was like, we were there and the, what do they call the wind?
Oh, the sea breeze.
No, but they've got a
the
name.
The Fremantle Doctor.
The Fremantle Docker. Or Doctor.
Yeah, so it comes in every day, normally about 3 o'clock, and it's this like howling sea breeze.
It was horrendous.
But sometimes it comes early and it's a really bad day.
So it was the only time, apparently, we were like there for the only day in the last month in October where it was like Melbourne weather.
Yeah.
It was like 16 degrees.
Otherwise, it's blue skies and 25.
Yeah. Mm. What about lessons from your parents? Do you think like there's any principles that you still have? Like, I know from my dad, I was always just brought into his like printing factory. So it was always just about hard work, sort of indirectly. He never said it, but you sort of just got it.
I think for me, something my mum taught me was, and I remember when she used to say it, I used to want to like scream at her because I thought it was annoying. But if you've got nothing nice to say, say nothing at all. And I truly believe that that has stuck with me to this day. If you're not a nice person, what have you got? I think there's no reason why people don't need to be nice. And I really try and take that into everyday work, life, relationships, business, everything.
So when you think of something not nice to say, what happens? Is it just like your brain just goes,
I probably say it to like Josh and then I'm like, okay, I can't say that to the other person. And then Josh is like, tame it down. And I'm like, okay.
I often get drafts of things she should say and I'm like, delete that. Delete that.
And then my dad just always have a always has a smile on his face, always have a good time. There's always a good thing to come out of it. So probably that from the two of them.
What about you, Josh?
So with me, I worked for Dad for 9 years. So I left high school and started in the shop fitting industry, which he owns a family business.
And you did your apprenticeship there?
Did my apprenticeship. So I did 4.5 years, I think, whatever it was on the tools. And then I moved into a junior project management role under Dad. At that point, there was one other project manager who I was kind of underneath, but it wasn't very long in, he left. And then it was kind of me and Dad for another, whatever the remaining was, 3 or 4 years. 5 years even maybe. But I guess what a hard lesson that he taught, which I don't know whether I ground it or not, but it's quite funny because when I was on the tools and, you know, his mentality was as long as you're working, you're making money, you're going in the right direction, you're young, whatever. So he'd always send me away interstate. And these are the years of 18 to 22 or 20, whatever it was. And so I was always interstate, always traveling. And it was hard with, like, you know, the girlfriend at the time and all this stuff. And we had a good network of friends who, like family friends we used to work with, that whenever there was a birthday on somehow, I'd be always been to state.
Oh, really?
And Dad would, like, FaceTime me from the party, like, 18th birthday, like, you know, just
that's
to...
such a new thing to do.
And it was devastating like, at that age, too.
Oh, absolutely. It was so hard. But it was just his way of saying that, like, life's not just a party. It was almost like you got to knuckle down and work, you know.
He's really taught you hard work, and I
absolutely.
Think he's very solutions-driven, which so are you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That stuff's quite grounding.
There's a lot to it, but it's like, it was just, yeah, work hard, and work hard young too, to set yourself up. So he pushed me right into investment really young, so I was very fortunate to buy investment property at just before I turned 19.
Wow.
So that was all him, and that was predominantly working 100-hour weeks interstate. Things like, you know, I'd be working stupid hours, and if you don't get a 10-hour break, you're on double time the next day. So I was like on double time pretty much my apprenticeship because I would just never sleep, I'd always be working.
Wow.
And he'd love that. I mean, anyone else was doing it, he'd crap the shits, but if I was working 100-hour weeks, that's like beautiful. Like,
do you think he, like, because I had this thing with my dad, like, do you think he envisaged you taking over the business?
100%.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no doubt. That was forever his dream, and ironically, it's a big reason why I ended up leaving. So
yeah.
The thing with Dad is a very strong, stern businessman as far as what I think is right, and that's it.
Yeah.
Do it my way or don't worry about it. I'll do it myself. So when it got to the point where I was, you know, 5 or 4 years into a project management role underneath him, he started to talk about, you know, taking over and stuff. I just said, I'm like, there's not once I felt like this is a team. I always work for you. I always will work for you. So I just made a decision. That was kind of a good little segue into where Soda started. I decided to leave and...
I just remember when you left. It was such a, like...
Yeah.
We had a conversation. I think we had dinner on, like, a Tuesday. And on Thursday, he's like, so I've left. And we were like...
What?
Yeah.
And then on Monday you went, or Sunday you went to China.
Yeah, we literally, well, we had a meeting, and that's where Chi and I met and stuff. And
it was
not met, but we discussed the potential of starting a business. And after that, I was like, that's it. That's all I needed. I needed just something to go to and put my mind to. And like you said, I finished my job on a Friday or whatever, and the following Tuesday or Thursday, I flew to China. And
do you know what, though? Like, that can act as sort of a good guide or a forcing function to make you want to prove what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, because I never, my dad always wanted me to do printing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of like 16, I could have easily run one of the big printing presses, but I just refused to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just such a boring, I don't know, it's just an old way of doing things.
Yeah.
And then as time went on and we now have our own business, it's sort of, yeah, you I don't know if you feel that, but I always feel like the need to prove myself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really need feel like I need to prove myself, but I definitely crave like creative outlet where I wasn't getting that at that job. It was just stressful, huge hours.
Yeah.
The burden of like letting dad down, or, you know, when you're working this close every day, and even like a portion of that, I was living at home when I was younger, like you're working and then eating dinner and getting up, and it's like too much. So
yeah,
it wore thin. And I mean, leaving's probably the best thing I ever did, because my relationship with dad's 30 times better than what it was then. And
it's always
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And it's been amazing for us how we've been able to involve him in the business, and
we do
some stuff at the property, and you know, you just see his face light up
when
we're like, oh, could we do this? And he's like, well, we could do da da da, and we're like, okay. And he just loves it. He loves being able to work with you again. It's a really nice thing to do.
For the first year, I've started up more. Year and a half. We worked out of where I used to work. So
did you really?
My last project at APS was we built the new facility, the new factory and office, and there was a bottom division that me and my brother had. It was about double the size of this room, and we just had, it was separated to the company we worked at. So that was a soda and midnight office where my brother's company. So we worked out of there every day.
He'd come in every day, and he'd sort of just like look over our shoulder being like, so what are you guys doing? What is that there? And we're like, oh, we don't even know. Probably just like online shopping, looking at something.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned before about this meeting, catching up for dinner on a Tuesday. I want to sort of segue into that and work out what is the sort of first conversation you guys had. I know that you're working, I guess this is how you know Aidan, right? You worked at Frank Body in social.
Yeah.
He was working at, what was the agency called?
Will and Blake.
Will and Blake, that's it. So you were doing that. So the two of you clearly have like a background in creative marketing, retail, social, all that sort of stuff. When I think at the time, Kick had just really kicked off.
Yeah,
no pun intended.
Pardon the pun.
Keep it clean would have been better.
Keep it clean. Yeah, you're right.
Because the app wasn't out yet.
Yeah, you're right.
So it really just begun. So I think 2018 is when you guys were like first looking at this. But you must have had
we did
conversations for months or a year even.
It was October.
It was October.
And we didn't launch until February 1st of 2018.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Steph and I worked together at Frank.
Okay.
So she was one of the first influencers I worked with.
And that's how you met.
When I first started at Frank. So she was literally one of the first that the girls were like, we want you to work with this person. And I was like,
Cool.
She looks fun. And we really hit it off. Steffi and I became really good friends. We're just very similar, very down to earth, just sort of say it how it is type attitude. And so I worked with her my whole career at Frank. So three and a half years.
Yep.
And quite closely as well. She was sort of on our books consistently that we would do work with her. We sort of, you know, it was a very fluid working relationship with all of the talent we worked with at Frank.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much a monetary thing. It was purely like, hey, what do you want to do? And Steph would be like, oh, I'm doing this month, or I'm going here. And we'd find a way to work together, which was really nice, and it made it really fun. And then we sort of had a mutual respect for how each other worked, I think was the major thing that brought Steph and I together. And the boys actually knew each other randomly.
I still laugh about this.
They did a campaign together.
So Luke used to own a hat company called
Five Panel Snapbacks.
What's it called? Ducks.
I don't know. Something.
They're like parachute material hats.
Real random.
Real random. Really colourful, like blue and pink and orange and whatever.
Do you still have...
Luke still has hundreds of these hats in his parents' garage.
Okay. Yeah.
You'll have to send me a snap of this later.
Yeah. I'll be able to find your photo of like our little photo shoot. But anyway, this guy, and it was Luke at Little Red Jet, hit me up one day.
Which is still his business name to this day.
I think it would have been Instagram probably. And he goes, oh, hey, what do you reckon about me coming and shooting some hats on you and just give you a slab of beer? This is like early Instagram deals. I'm like,
what year was
my dad
what
amazed year is this? I'm getting free beer. This would have been
what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, like I was. This is this no more. This is before I travelled.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This is like
seven
years ago, more even.
Yeah. So this is
something like that.
Early Instagram days.
They didn't know this. So when we went and had dinner for the first time, the four of us, we went to St. Cloud.
Mm.
The boys were kind of like, hang on. And so in your phone, is Luke still Luke Young Hats?
Yeah. Still to this day, Luke Young Hats.
Don't you love that with phones? You always have it's like, great. You know.
It's the best.
First name company.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think just between the four of us, we felt really privileged that, well, first and foremost, we were friends. And I think that there's a lot of businesses that start for a lot of different reasons, but we started as friends with a real mutual respect for how we all worked, which still to this day is probably the underlying thing that gets us through. There's certainly pressing times and conversations, but they're healthy ones because we all have that level of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that we wanted to do something that was unisex. All four of us wanted to be involved. We all wanted to have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We all wanted to help with the design. There was no one who was really like, I want to do this or I want to do that. We're all kind of like, this is fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you guys had thought about Sunnies before.
Yeah. Steph and I dabbled with a friend of ours to do a little collab thing with Sunnies. So we had a little bit of background as far as the process of designing sunglasses and bringing to market. Unfortunately, both mine and her pair didn't go to market in the end after a period of time. So it's a bit of a tease. We're like, oh, that was fun. And
I want to do it.
Well, we had the samples. Yeah. We went through all that process and like photo shoots and all this stuff. So we kind of experienced kind of what it was to design or draw it, design it, sample it, shoot it.
Yeah.
I don't still to this day know why it didn't come out, but it's probably a blessing in disguise, really.
Yeah,
everything happens for a reason. And that was a bit of a fundamental because we were like, Steph and I were like, back then was one of the most things we ever got asked. We both wore heaps of sunnies, always had different sunnies. We just liked it and we shared them and whatnot. So we kind of said, like, let's do a unisex sunglass company.
Yeah. Well, you and Steph are sort of the market, in a way, market research, right? With that audience, you would have people ask you things all the time.
Well, that was, that was, I mean.
Any requests for feet shots for you yet?
For what, sorry?
Feet shots. You know,
feet.
This is one of the weird things that we hear regularly from influencers that come in, like feet
is a
thing.
Can you show me your feet?
Yeah.
No, you haven't had
it. Oh, no. No, we're fetish and stuff. No. No, I never had a foot fetish person hit me up. No. No.
So Sunnies. So I know, like, when Steph was interested, saying, okay, we'd been, you know, we pinched Sunnies off each other.
Yeah.
The saying that we'd always liked.
Yep.
Like what you said, you did the test with this company. And then when was the conversation? Do you remember it? Like, were you guys at a cafe?
Yeah, we were at dinner.
We were at dinner.
We were eating chicken wings.
And funny.
And Steph ordered for us, which she still does to this day.
And funny
we
enough,
never order our own food.
Luke brings his laptop to dinner, which is a standard procedure.
Luke.
Anywhere Luke is, his laptop's somewhere within
is he a document?
Arm's reach.
Loves a spreadsheet.
Loves a spreadsheet. So we're sitting there and he flips open the spreadsheet and he's like, I've done some numbers. And this thing was like, like, you know, like pages, like figures.
Yeah.
And it was, I just remember something crazy number. He's like, within 6 months, we'll make $19 million. And I was just like, whoa. I'm bringing dad.
And Steph and I like chicken wings.
I'm like, I've made it. I'm making $19 million next December. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I might be exaggerating the figure. It was
something astronomical.
Crazy. And he's like, all you got to do is sell this amount. I'm like, well, we can do that. Awesome.
Yeah. And then from there, it really, I guess.
Well, that was then, yeah. Then I was like, righto. I'm going to phase out of work, leave.
Yeah.
And then my brother, this was my brother at the time, he's still my brother.
You sure?
He was going to China a bit with his bikini company. So we reached out to his kind of contact over there and said, do you know any sunglass manufacturers? Real basic stuff. Like, anyone make sunnies? He's like, yeah, we got a guy. So I jumped on the flight with him on his next meeting, which was 3 weeks after that dinner pretty much.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe a bit longer. I don't know when that dinner was.
Yeah.
But yeah, off we went and came back with
four
styles that we designed. That's what we launched with.
But I think we spent a lot of time in that conversation, and Luke's background very much, he loves a computer, like always, always crunching numbers. But we also knew that there was a massive gap, and there was the gap to connect with an audience. And I felt like there was no brands at the moment who were connecting on a personal level.
Yeah.
And my background is very heavily all in marketing, and there was a lot of stuff that I'd been sort of employed by brands for, you know, 6 week to 6 month period, and I'd given them ideas and they haven't used them. And I'd be really bummed because I'm like, well, I've come up with this really cool idea. you won't use it. And I was like, well, I can use that in my own brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's been so fun being able to actually put some of these ideas into play and see them work.
Yeah.
And similarly with Luke, he's able to build the tech side of things. So he was able to customize the text message software. So we sort of felt like we had a good product or a product concept and also a way to actually deliver that product to people.
Yeah, and you didn't have too many gaps in the team that you could hack it together and get it out there.
That's where our team's really strong, is we all have a great skill set and such variety in skill set too, which is really cool.
Yeah, like I was thinking about that, like, you know, you guys, I caught my note here was like, awesome foursome.
We're very fortunate.
We'll take that.
You've said in prior interviews, I think it was the Amazon Launchpad one, that like there's clear benefits to each of them. I guess I was curious, what do you think, or what couldn't you do without each other? What do you think each person brings?
Well, I can't model.
Yeah.
At all. In fact, whenever we do a photo shoot, I'm like, come on, Steph, just do it like this. And everyone just looks at me like, you probably couldn't do an Excel spreadsheet.
Even like, when it comes to going out to companies and brands, like Jay and I probably spend more time together as far as word vomiting, everything, and then we kind of collate and distribute in whatever way it is. So, I mean, like, yeah, my strength isn't obviously sending out all the fancy emails and whatnot, but I'm good at kind of
building
out what I want in it.
And
then, you know all the key parts. I mean, for Luke, he can't spell. So,
nor can I though, so leave that to you.
And is the world's worst communicator. So we kind of all sort of balance each other out. I think, I mean, the biggest thing that we have had no knowledge about and still to this day are learning is, I mean, supply and demand.
Yeah.
And developing a product, we've had some sort of very fortunate encounters along the way, but we've also had a lot of hiccups.
Yeah.
So we're just a small team and we're very transparent with our audience. And I think that's the biggest thing. And that was something we said from the beginning. We want to bring out a quality product is sort of number one. But if we can't, or if there's any reason why we get held up, just be honest about it.
Yeah.
We're not perfect. And the audience we're talking to is just like us. So that's been really successful for us.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's clear, like, it reminds me a lot of July and this whole direct-to-consumer model. Just back on the point of what you guys bring, I think it's quite obvious, like, you're clearly the guy who'll go out to manufacture. Like, just thinking about your experience flying out as part of that retail role, and I can see that you're very much like a brand strategist coming from that background. And I see Luke as sort of the guy that he, it sounds like he loves the back of house stuff.
He just tells us how much money we can spend.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
And then Steph is clearly, like, in my opinion, a very, very smart marketer.
Mm. Yeah.
And obviously brings influence as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think the best thing, well, not the best, but one of the best things about Steffi is she's able to have those conversations with her audience. And it's funny how you say they were like a test case in terms of doing their sunnies. Literally, if we have a product and we're not sure about it, Steph will put up a poll and be like, do you guys like these?
We've done that like in development meetings.
And in Hong Kong, we've done it.
Within like we're at a table designing stuff, she'll put a pair on. What do you think? It'll come back like 2%. We're like, right, move on. Next one's like 88%. We're like, even that's one we're like not sure on. We're like, oh, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
And there's already feedback. It's like, it's super powerful as far as...
Yeah, great for A-B testing and all that sort of stuff.
Amazing. Yeah. But, I mean, Steph's just connection with her audience is just incredible. It's one, I mean, it's personally, I've worked with my fair share of marketers like Steph and I haven't worked with anyone better. Her ability to tell us what works and what doesn't work and then be able to be like, hey, Jay, I tried this thing and this worked, but could you tell me why maybe this didn't work? Is just incredible, and we're so fortunate to be able to work with her so closely.
I want to come back to Steph later, but I got to ask about the name. I know that you were the one that she mentioned. You were the one that mentioned soda.
Mm-hmm.
There's obvious themes of like summer parties, fun.
Perfect.
You just nailed it. That's it.
Where, like that. All I see with your marketing is that. Like, actually, you can't. It's it's really obvious. I was curious, like, when did you guys think, like, that was the... Because it sounds like you wanted to take what you all are and just condense it into a brand anyway.
I'm trying to think of the name we had originally, remember?
Don't say it.
Yeah, she said it on the episode. It was like a...
Opulence.
Yeah, it was opulence. Not a good name.
It was opulence, which means, like, rich. Which, look at us, we're not rich.
Yeah.
We run a charity, basically.
Is that what it was? Opulence?
Opulence.
Yeah.
Look, it was hard. It was really hard. I remember to-ing and fro-ing for ages. You and I probably spoke about it the most, just going back and forth.
What about the and then
that was the main word we came to. We want it to be fun and we want it to be summer. I was very fortunate in my days working at Frank that the girls taught me everything when it comes to sort of coming up with something with meaning and something with purpose and something you can actually use in a sentence, which I think is sort of where soda then came from. And soda for us is less about the thing, soda, although I love soda water, more about the feeling that soda has and that summer has. And for us, it's all about that feeling of when you crack open a can or that sound and you hear that hiss and you get that pastel fizz. For us, that just makes me excited.
And that was like also our base, our colour palette of our brand. Yeah. So all the opaque pink and purples, it was like when you fill up your glass of soft drink, it's like that colour at the top. Uh-huh. That's kind of where that stemmed. Like.
And then the packaging.
Where did you, like, what was the moment where it triggered it? Were you just drinking like a can of something?
I remember the day, I was actually still at APS working. Because I was down in Frankston fixing something at a shaver shop. And you rang me and you're like, I remember I was walking down the mall and you're like, what do you reckon about soda? And I was like, oh, yeah. I wasn't too, like, sure on it at the start.
I remember no one was too sure of it at the start and I had to really flesh it out further. So I started there and I still have the 6-page document that I wrote, and I wrote it in, like, sentences. I wrote phrases, so, like, the look of a sundaes, all those sorts of things. And then we started fleshing it out more on this whole seeing through soda concept, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then it's, I mean, it's been really fun. Yeah. It's been really fun to develop on it.
We've been able to play on it really well and easily, which is quite cool.
Because the hardest thing you have as business owners and marketers is standing out. And marketing these days, like, actually, like, I was just doing my own research on the website. I'm like, okay, so they run no Google ads. It's basically parties. I was like, I was trying to trigger the ad. I reckon I'd been on your website like 6 times. I'm like, are they retargeting? Okay, there's a bit of retargeting there. But like the bulk of it is text and parties and all that sort of stuff. It is quite a competitive advantage.
Well, that's kind of where the parties came about. We were never going to be a predominant event party-based marketing business by any means. I mean,
and it's quite ironic, really. Steph and I aren't big drinkers or partiers, the boys.
We got the opportunity to launch the company with an old friend, still friend of mine, Nick Russian.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the ex-owner of Eve Nightclub.
Yeah.
So he's got this business called Together Events. I worked with Nick at Eve Nightclub for
And I'd worked with Rosa.
Years. Yeah, yep. Everyone in Melbourne who's been to Eve knows
Nick. So,
so we knew them, yeah.
He was a legend and gave us the opportunity to actually launch our brand at the St. Kilda Fest.
Which was insane.
Captain Baxter rooftop party.
Did he approach you?
Yeah, he did. I think you'd seen him and then he knew my background in marketing.
Yeah.
You two were great mates.
Yeah.
But for someone to give us the opportunity and have the faith in a brand that literally didn't exist, like, was incredible.
It didn't exist. So, yeah, we rocked up there and...
Why? What do you think he saw in it?
I mean, there's probably a few things there. Like, he sees, you know, it's obviously a good thing to have Steph along to a party.
Mm-hmm.
My past relationship with him working for him is a bit of a, you know, bit of a thank you, maybe, to a degree.
And I think also he believed us.
Yeah.
He trusted us and he trusted what we were selling. And I think that's got us everywhere. And, you know, 99% of where we are today is because we're very trustworthy, we're very true to our word, we're very hard workers. And I think Nick saw that. And still to this day, we did it in February this year. It was our second birthday. And we're down there setting up.
So it was our third party with Nick on the rooftop.
Hanging flags.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of founders aren't the people down there doing that nowadays. But that's just who we are and what we do.
Yeah.
I guess once that happened, we kind of saw...
You realised.
I mean, traditional influencer marketing kind of 2 years ago was like, send everyone a bunch of stuff and they post and hopefully they do, and sometimes they don't. Then it was like, then contracts started coming to stuff. So I guess our way, instead of, we never want to force our product onto people. I mean, we do send out stuff to people all the time, but predominantly it's if they've asked for it. Yeah. Sometimes if we're launching something new, we'll say, hey, do you like it? If you want it, let us know. And they'll go, yeah, we do. Off it goes. But instead of like stepping away from that, I guess every brand and every influencer is just plugging products. We were like, let's put on these events and work with venues and alcohol companies and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And create an experience for our consumer.
Yeah.
and our influencers. So when they come, they have the best time ever. They still get their product. But when they think down the track about sunglasses, they remember us because that awesome day and experience they had. That's kind of where we saw such success early on. And then it's, I mean, then obviously other companies and venues were like, what are you guys doing?
It goes back to that feeling.
It just kind of snowballed on. So
it's that positive feeling that is sort of around the brand that we wanted to have. I mean, anyone really can make a pair of sunnies, but I don't think everyone can put on an experience that makes you walking away going, I had a great day. There was lovely people there. I want to go again. I like the soda feeling.
I think, like, because I was thinking about this with Ethan, like, I reckon that the model of business that you guys have means that, or sort of forces you to come up with marketing ideas that aren't as expensively priced as, say, what Facebook properties are nowadays, or influence, or all these sort of standard channels that exist. It actually makes you think longer and deeper about, like, what actually develops brand. Because, like, it's harder, but it also, when you can get it right, it has better results. And because in this business, you've got to put all your money into, like, manufacturing, right? And custom service.
Yeah, I mean, the, like, bottom line is we can't afford to do those glamorous marketing initiatives that, you know, we might like to do, or we might see other people doing. And it's also not how I would be if we did have the money. It's not how I'd spend it anyway. So we pour every dollar back into making more product because we're very fortunate that it all sells out. So, you know, that's why Josh was saying about with influencers and how we work with them. We actually don't have enough product, enough stock to send to every influencer every time around, because then we won't have any to sell. So it has to be a bit of a conversation. Do you like this pair? It's all good. If you don't, move on.
Yeah.
And that's cool. You know, every pair's not for everyone.
It's got me thinking about this business model, because when you go through the website, like, it's, it again reminds me of July, and you look at the price point. You've spoken about affordability, but it's when you actually get the product and you realize, like, actually it's not that this is affordable. Like, this is really, really fucking good when you get it.
Yeah.
Like, I was blown away when I got, I don't know who had some soda sunglasses. It was, like, obviously Steph, but someone else brought them in, and I was like, because I bought the standard. What's the Oliver Peoples sort of brand that's made in California? Not the actual Oliver Peoples.
Not Bailey Nelson.
No.
It was made by the guy who designed it, Oliver Peoples. This is what I meant. I can't even remember the fucking name.
Oh, I don't know.
But they're, you know, some $400 pair. And I was like comparing it. And actually last week I got a new July bag, and it's the same thing. I was comparing my Qantas branded bag to my July bag, and it's like the difference in craftsmanship is quite distinct.
It's been a huge priority of ours is to deliver. Well, at the moment we're already delivering something, I guess, that far outsees its price point.
Yeah.
And that was super important to us. We didn't want to put our names or our brand to something that we weren't proud of as far as quality. When you pick up, like, our first thing, when you pick up a pair of sunglasses, you want the comment to be like, oh, these feel good. Almost surprised by the fact that they're $89.
Yeah.
And they feel...
That's your hardest job as marketers, like, is to convince people that,
like,
they are.
With sunglasses, like, the first thing, you don't even have to wear them. You don't have to look, see what they look like. When you pick them up, oh, they feel good.
And I think a lot of that came from my experience is if you've got a really great product, that's something you can control. So we can control that the product's going to be the top quality. There's elements, though, once you get bigger that you can't control. So once you go into a retailer, once I hand over my product, I have no control over that. And I remember being on a trip in America for one of my clients and doing some market research and going into some of the retail stores and seeing the product on the shelves, and it was really poorly visual merchandised, or someone had, like, picked it up and ripped away. And I remember vividly calling the founder and being like, I'm just going to buy it all. I can't have it sitting on the shelves. It looks so bad. And that's our worst nightmare. And that's why we haven't gone into retail yet, because we wanted to get it to a stage where we were really proud and we could hand it over to an Osmosis or a City Beach or whoever, and they'd go, oh, this is amazing. I don't even have to maintain this. And we're there, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
I thought about that. Like, what do you do with that? Because we had Alex from The Fifth in, and he was talking about, because now they're going to get just like a showroom like July has. Like, so you can buy something there, but it's really the purpose is to go and, you know, touch the thing.
Yeah.
So what have you thought about that?
For retail?
Yeah.
For us,
talk about what's down on the water.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful touch point.
So for us, it's about looking at retail. Our sort of tagline is through a different lens.
Yeah.
In the sense that just being a bit more creative with our retail placement, because, I mean, the margins for us are small. because the price point is low, and that's something that we don't want to change. But sunnies are really handy, is what we've figured out. So our first retail placement, which we locked in December.
December.
So we are now behind the bar at Arbury Afloat, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
So a sunny bar, a cool place. We know some of the guys in marketing there, and they just hit me up, and it just came to life, which was super cool, and they've gone through a few hundred pairs now.
Yeah. So I think we're one of the first physical retail product on a bar menu.
So we sit on the menu. So we sit next to a margarita.
Next to like the vodka and Jack Daniels. You get a soda can. And the way it works is it's $89 like anywhere else. But when you buy it, they'll take the sunnies out, you put them on your face, and you give the can back, and they'll give you a free cocktail in the soda can.
That's sick.
Yeah.
So it's like what G said, it's like those unique, different ways to retail our product that isn't traditional as such.
When did that come about? How recent?
December.
December 2019.
Early December, yeah.
Yeah, really early.
Interesting.
So we're in the process at the moment of exploring that further, of what does that look like as far as going to every sunny bar.
Yeah, because the world's really your oyster when you can start thinking of engaging, particularly with like hospitality venues.
Hospitality is interesting to us. I mean, I worked in hospo for 10 years plus. And then when we started Soda, we were like, what does our retail presence look like? What do we want? It goes back to that feeling. When someone comes into our store or a store where we're sitting, how do we want them to feel when they see the product? How do we want them to feel when they walk out and they have it in their hand? And then we did that pop-up at Bumble, which was really cool. That was our first time we ever sold sunnies. And we assumed that being Bumble, Steph had done a lot of work with Bumble, I'd done some work with Bumble. We just kind of assumed the customer would overlap. We were like, oh, everyone will know who Soda is. And what, about 80% had never heard of us before, which we were like, what?
Yeah. But Melbourne
we were also
too,
like, Luke on the data was like, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
And then we sold so much product. You remember? We were all four of us, because we didn't have a like proper method. We had it in this cool display cabinet, but then all this product was just under a trestle table. All four of us, like we're like crawling around on our hands and knees trying to find products, calling, Steph, can you get this?
Yeah, it was madness.
It was mad, but it was so cool. I mean, we had hundreds of pairs of sunnies leave that day.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah, I could see it like down at like your Reva. That's interesting. Has this been done before?
I don't believe so. I did a bit of searching around online and I haven't seen anything as far as...
I mean,
a lot of beach clubs that I've looked at overseas have like your little merch store where they'll have like hats and towels and T-shirts and whatever. But as far as actually having a retail product on a menu, I haven't seen it.
What would be the pinnacle bar, restaurant, beach cafe for you?
In Melbourne?
Anywhere in the world. Like I'm thinking about, is it Finn's Beach Club down in...
That's where my mind is going a million miles right now, is over to Bali, over to California, over to anywhere, Venice, anything that's...
There's a few spots in the US that we would love to do. We've done two events in New York now, which were really successful. One was on a pool rooftop, the other was sort of more enclosed. I mean, if you could get it at like a Malibu Soho House equivalent, but sort of for a younger audience, that would be cool. These places where you need a pair of sunglasses and if you've forgotten them, you're annoyed.
That's like,
but you're not povo, so you don't want to buy a shitty sunglasses from a service station.
Yeah.
You want good quality. I mean, Arbery works. That's who we want.
Arbery works so good because I don't know if you've been there, but when you're on you especially like on sunset, the water comes down onto the Yarra and straight into your eyes, and you spend the whole day like this.
You need sunnies.
So the waiters were actually saying before we were there, people would try to buy the sunnies off the waiters.
No.
Like, can I please buy your sunnies off you? I can't see. I'm trying to have a conversation.
That should be your target. Anywhere that there's a water.
Where there's like something really bright.
But what's worked really well as well is because it's been our first retail spot, we've had anywhere around 100 people via DM or text. Hey, I heard your sunnies are at Arbery. Can you tell us what stock's there? I'm going to go buy them. I'm going to go try them on. And people aren't even staying for their free
drink. People will walk in and buy sunnies and leave.
And they're like, they just want the sunnies.
There's something so good about that tactileness. Because, like, the podcast gets way more listens on audio. Mm. But the video is what, like, really changed it.
Mm.
It made it real, if that makes sense. Mm. So I can sort of see, like, how that would be sort of quite similar.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Supply chain. We're talking about coronavirus down in the kitchen.
Yes.
I know that... do you guys get your stuff manufactured in Hong Kong?
No.
No.
I'll touch on that a little bit. So we have a business partner based in Hong Kong, which is our manufacturer.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a team over there of roughly...
150?
Yeah.
140?
So they're huge, huge, huge business that manufacture global sunglasses.
Uh-huh.
Like 30...
We're very fortunate in the fact that they would never even give us a look in, but they approached us and said, we like what you're doing in the market. Can we talk? So we went and met them and they now have a share of our company.
Mm-hmm.
But based on that, I mean, having them too, like going back a little bit to when we were designing, leaning, like when we first started Soda, when the first four pairs that we launched with, that was purely just what we think was cool at the time. Now we've got the advantage of having data and... You know, they're selling 32 million pairs a year. So we'll walk in and go, I'm loving these. And they're like, don't, because that style stinks.
They're selling to brands that are so big and planning so far in advance that they know what's coming.
So we have a team member there that's a trend projectionist, essentially. So she travels the world, fashion shows, and she just sits down with us and goes, this is sick in like 12 months, and we're all like, nah, I'd never wear that. And then, the next year, we sit in the office, I walk in there with a pair of sunnies, she's like, I told you. Like, so now we listen to her, but having that advantage is unbelievable.
That's interesting, because I've always wondered how that works, because Ethan said the same thing, we've got a business partner. And so I'm guessing it's just like some sort of shareholder agreement where they become part of the business in a way.
Yeah, so they really wanted, they weren't doing anything in the social media space at all. They were very much, hi Zara, here are our pairs.
Here's 200,000 of them, like distributed around the world. Yeah.
So they just found, I guess, our business model and the conversations we were having, and more so, I guess, the conversations we were starting. Fascinating. They just couldn't believe it. Mm. And I still remember vividly when Daniel, the owner, he's Australian but lives in Hong Kong, came to one of our parties, and he was just like, "What is this? What have you guys done?" But in the best possible way, he brought his friends and they just stood there listening to Rufus being like, is this real?
How long has he been in the business for?
Daniel?
Like in the sunglasses game?
Oh.
Ages. Forever. Like
That'd be fascinating.
They've got offices in New York, London.
Barcelona.
Hong Kong.
Yeah.
South Africa.
I don't know.
Does he wear his sunglasses at night?
He actually wears our sunglasses, which is really cool. Well,
I mean, Luke wears his sunglasses at night, and it's always a branding opportunity.
But back to supply chain. So with that...
How's that been?
So we obviously had, I mean, a lot of companies who just deal directly with the factory would be getting a lot of, I guess, mumbo jumbo, you know. But having Daniel, and predominantly everyone over there is like Australian, and if not, speaks perfect English too. So when you pick up the phone, it's just like a conversation like this, which is amazing. But as far as we're aware right now, all our manufacturing factories are shut down.
Really?
They're not working.
We have a few thousand units sitting ready to come that were due about 6 weeks ago.
So we doubled down on our top six sellers for the For the Love tour that we did throughout February. So we're supposed to receive stock start of Jan. Mm-hmm. Or mid-Jan, I think it was, 13th of January, ready for that influx of kind of brand awareness. So we went on tour, did the 3 weeks of For the Love with no stock, essentially. Not no stock, but, I mean, we're probably 85% sold out of all our good stuff, like our main sellers.
Mm.
So that was, we doubled down to be able to capitalize on all that spend on this tour, and we had nothing to sell. I mean, we launched two new styles, which is kind of what... That saved us big time. Like we got them just in before this went down. So without that, we'd be a lot worse off.
Hmm.
I've heard some horror stories.
But we've been told end of March. But, you know, what I'm kind of understanding is they're saying that, but then China's only got so many boats and whatnot. They can get everything out, or planes or whatever. So it's kind of just get in line. I mean, the world's trying to get everything out at the moment.
Yeah,
the cost has skyrocketed, the freight cost. The
landed cost has gone up.
I think for us, it's affecting us like it's affecting anyone else who's in this market. we were actually just talking about this before. We feel very fortunate that we had quite a busy summer in the sense that we made a lot of noise, not necessarily selling. We sold a lot of product, but noise in the social space and event space that made sure people knew who Soda was and what we're all about. So even though we don't have product to capitalize on that now in sales, we've got tens of thousands of people waiting to purchase who have just sort of come into our funnel and are going, feed me. And once the stock comes, we will feed them. So we're actually, we were kind of saying we're having a bit of a break. In the sense we're just going, what now?
And I mean, from December through to now has been
nuts.
Madness with the events. How many have we done? I'm trying to put a number. It's like probably seven, I think. Large-scale events that we've put on.
Well, that has me thinking about product strategy, because I know that one of the things, I guess one of the things you guys did really well is you sort of have hero products, and as you say before, you doubled down on those six. What does the future hold for product? How are you thinking about that?
Well, so the heroes, our initial strategy was one new product every month. Was the plan. So it sort of was like blaster text, here, meet Florence. She's online, bye. She'll be around for a while. Florence sold out very fast, a lot faster than we expected. So that strategy sort of fell by the wayside. So we've sort of just by default found these hero products that people just time and time and time again want.
We've developed our core range essentially by seeing what people really respond to.
But in terms of, I guess, the future, I mean, we're very lucky that we have these sort of forecasters that we work with, but it's also just, it's having these transparent conversations with our audience. What do you want to see more of, especially with Steph? Steffi, what do you want to be wearing? What do you see coming up in trends? What are gaps that you're seeing in the market? But also, I guess exactly what we were talking about before, Soda has filled that spot for a quality product and an affordable price point. Sunny's, I mean, there's Sunnies in lots of different areas. So, you know, we're thinking snow, we're thinking kids, we're thinking more elite sports. We've just finished six different colours with Dylan Alcott, which has been really fun. So he's worn a different colour pair of Dylan's.
At every Grand Slam.
At every Grand Slam, which has been really cool. I mean, he loves them. He wears them in everyday life and looks somewhat insane. But that's been really fun for us to have a pair that sits in sport, which, you know, Luke's dad can wear. He wears them cycling or in triathlons, or the boys can wear playing golf, or Steph can wear running.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, it just gives you now the opportunity to think about what different areas to go into. Maybe you should create some coronavirus goggles.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
I heard Culture Kings was sending a free mask with every order over $50. I was like, that's genius.
Yeah. Well, like a 3M mask?
I don't know what the type of mask is, but a free mask with an order over $50.
That's so fucking
love
funny.
Love that.
That's good.
I'm going to have to look that up after. I want to jump back as we sort of get to our rapid fire questions and this room continues to heat up. Steph, we're talking about her before. She gave me some good notes on you guys.
Perfect.
I was saying before, she's clearly a marketing genius, but she also was very, I guess you could say, like, very appreciative of you guys when she gave me the notes. I think she quite likes your creativity and imagination, G, and I think she likes your selflessness in particular. She said extroversion. I don't know if you agree with that.
Haven't really thought about it. I need to think about it.
What have you guys learnt from her that she probably bought from the Kick business in particular?
I've learned from her that I don't have much going on compared to her.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think I'm stressed, then I look at her calendar, I'm like, okay, shut up, get on with it. I mean, everyone gets stressed, but like, she manages her time and workload like I've never seen anyone do. She's in a million places and does a million things, and her mind can be a million areas of, I mean, there's a lot of things that goes on between what they're doing over there and then the groceries and then us and then home and then everything else. So the way she manages everything without really blowing her lid ever is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, she's so busy.
Yeah. I would agree.
Mm.
I think I learnt it from her, but I also have learnt it from a mentor of mine about the ability to listen has been a really big thing. And Steph might have an opinion on something, but she's always there to listen to your opinion too and then talk it through with you. And I think that we've had, between the four of us, we've had some really great conversations where one of us has been, you know, frustrated with the other or pissed off with the other or whatever. But Steph's ability to talk it through with us and just be transparent and honest with us, that has really shaped the direction of the business. There's times where she's just like, guys, I'm off for a month. I've got so much going on with Kik or whatever it is. I need to focus here. If you need me, call me and I'm there for you. But I can't really be on those day-to-day calls or whatever. And that's fine. But had she have not told us that, we'd be like, well, where is she?
Yeah.
She's not pulling her weight. Mm. Whereas we know what's going on and we know the areas she loves. We know this knows the stuff she's not so interested in. And that's been really great.
We've
for
really
us.
Fine-tuned that now too. It's great.
It's
we know where we can utilize her and where to leave her alone.
Yeah.
And that's it's very been clear now, so it's good.
Yeah, and I think also something she's taught all of us is looking after ourselves. It's very easy, doing soda, but then also doing, for me, four or five other things to forego that side of things, just mindfulness, but also obviously exercise and everything. And she's the first person to come home and be like, Jay, off we go. We're taking Ari for a walk. We're doing something else. I know you've been sitting at that computer from when I left at 7 o'clock this morning. And I'm like, I have.
Yeah, that is a very valuable trait. I'm terrible at that shit. I constantly have to remind, I've got like alarms to go to have breaks, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, I want to jump into some rapid fire questions to finish us off.
Perfect.
What does your morning routine look like?
Mine involves coffee. They're different.
Yeah.
It really depends. We travel a lot.
Yeah.
Is the thing that I would say, especially Luke and I. You know, it's we're here, there and everywhere. And if you ask Aiden or any of my friends, they're like, oh, where have you been now? Yeah. And someone actually asked me this the other day and I was like, oh, I was only away for 10 days. And they were like, but you were there. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then when I said it out loud, I was like, I've been in Newcastle, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Hunter Valley and Sydney. And they were like,
wow,
that's gross.
Yeah.
So for me, something I'm mindful of is like it's tiny. But when I wake up and turn my alarm off, don't look at my phone.
Okay.
Just lie in bed for 2 minutes and just remember I'm grateful for what I'm doing. And it sounds somewhat silly, but like I'm grateful for what I'm doing. I'm grateful I have my health. I'm going to get up and respect my body and da-da-da today. And that's been something that I've only started doing the last 12 months. And it just gives me this like feeling of like, huh. And it's 2 minutes.
I like that.
And then I have coffee and then I go.
And then you're mad.
And then I'm...
Mine's different. I go through stages, and it's one thing I lack is probably a routine that I always stick to. Mm-hmm. I go through stages. I'm somewhat erratic. I'll be like full in gym mode, healthy eating, crazy. That's what I'm doing, and I'll start preaching it. And then next minute, I'm like, nah, off it, not gymming. I'll get up when I want to get up. I mean, I'm not like sleeping in, but it's not like I'm getting up at 7 and going to the gym at 7 and all this stuff. So I kind of just weave in and out. Steph and I have been trying to get up. I mean, we probably do it 2-3 times a week. Get up, walk the dog, get a coffee, come home first thing in the morning, which has been great. No phone, just go for a stroll. Mm. Similar to that. It's like just get up and don't get up and dive in your emails and, you know, go crazy on
what I'm today. I'm very bad at that.
Yeah. And I mean,
that being said, there's days where you have to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of the time... Steph and I get out of bed at the moment different times because sometimes she's up really early, sometimes she has to be somewhere else later. I'm going to be up at a flight early, whatever. So it's kind of, I mean, I need to work more, I think, on having something that's more specific. You know, I'm up at 7 every day. I'm doing this.
Yeah. Hmm. Evening routine, how do you guys decompress at night?
Luke doesn't.
He does not, does he?
He is on his computer 2 or 3 nights a week. I go to bed about 3 hours before him.
Wow.
He's a full night owl.
Like, are we talking 1 a.m., 2 a.m.?
1, 2 a.m., 3 or 4 nights a week working.
Jesus.
For me, I'm obsessed with Netflix, or I always am in a series, so at the moment it's Drive to Survive.
Oh, yes. Do you know, I'm deep in Outlander at the moment. Didn't think I'd like it.
Yeah.
After a few episodes in, I just can't help myself.
Yeah.
At least three episodes a night if I can go.
Oh, no, so I'm a 1 episode, and then I'm trying to get back into stretching every night.
Oh, yeah.
That was a Steph one as well. Just finding 20 minutes to lie on a Pilates roller. Luke's running 2 marathons this year, so he has to do it as well because his body's just tight. What's yours? You play on your phone.
Yeah, so I've been really struggling with sleep lately. Okay. So we actually have, it's kind of... doesn't really make that much sense, but we Steph went out to Instagram and goes, what's every single movie you have to watch? Have to watch it. Right, like, give us all the best ones. So we've got this jar in our like movie room where we, every night we just play out a movie. So we've been watching movies like most nights. And that's, you know, an hour to 2 hours before bed. No phone, just sit on the couch. But I don't really agree with it because like, instead of being on your phone, you're looking at an even bigger phone before bed. So I don't really...
But you've got your blue light glasses.
I do. And I've been trying everything at the moment and yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very, hard.
I mean...
I read like half an hour before bed. That helps me just like fall asleep. But everyone's different. My partner, she can't do it.
Mm. But yeah, that's at the moment. It's movies and trying to be off our phone.
Well, last question for you guys. If you had to recommend a movie, doc or show, what would it be to the audience?
I should know heaps.
Yeah, you should.
Don't you love that? You put him on the moment and say, what have I been watching the last 2 months?
Do you know what? I would pick two movies, and it's because it's the same actress. Would be those ones we've been telling you to watch, Molly's Game and Miss Sloane with Jessica, one of them. Whatever her name is. We
never
love it.
Never heard of it.
They're great. Both of them are on Netflix, I think. They're long, but she's so intelligent.
It's like those movies where it's all like epic storyline that just all comes together at the end. Like,
Miss Sloane in particular is phenomenal. Molly's Game equally as good.
I don't think I've seen Molly's Game. I've seen the other one. Yeah.
I'll write this down. What about you?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had a good little Netflix series binge in ages. The last thing I watched was Money Heist, which I loved.
Oh, yeah.
Binge that hard. Like, that was... Couldn't stop.
My in-laws are recommending.
What I actually really enjoyed watching, it's an easy watch, was Designated Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it. It was good. Easy watch, just like...
It's very easy to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it. I mean, I got stuck in that, and apparently there's a new season coming out, so...
Yeah. I feel like there was a break in seasons and I was just like, oh.
Yeah, there was.
I found something else
now. Yeah. And I mean, if I'm going to go old school, it's Breaking Bad every day of the week.
Yeah, Breaking Bad.
Really love good. That.
Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
no worries.
Where can people find you on the interwebs? Where can they find Soda?
At Soda Shades.
At Soda Shades. SodaShades.com.au. And
text us.
Yes.
Which you'll find our phone numbers in our bio. And also check out seethroughsoda.com, which is our new blog. Which has all our parties, all our content, all our photo shoots, everything fun.
Yeah, I saw that.
Is in there, which is, really cool. Proud of that.
What's the weirdest thing you've just quickly been texted through?
Oh, man, there's millions of text messages.
I don't know. Do you know what I find?
At the start, we got some weird stuff because people are like working out what this is. But now kind of everyone in there knows the drill. Yeah. So
I think the weirdest but not weird, probably the most interesting thing is people will try, because it's a form of social media essentially, people will try and be rude or troll-like or whatever, and then Josh writes back and is like, hey, it's Josh, blah, 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 and they're like, oh, is it actually Josh?
Yeah.
Or Steph will write back being like, oh, hey, it's Steph, like, how can I help?
And I've never
that real
that.
Nature of it, people go, I can't be an asshole anymore.
Yeah.
And they're not.
There is something really weird about that. I remember speaking to Steph and Laura about it, how people will, like, Laura was telling me that someone will message her accidentally as if they're messaging a friend saying something about her.
Yeah.
And when she replies to it, they get the biggest shock of their life.
Yeah.
But
Laura's the best with killing with kindness too.
She sits there with a smile on her face. Yeah, okay.
Look, thanks for coming in. It's been a pleasure.
Sounds good.
Been lovely.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening in to this episode. If you like it, do leave us a written review on your podcast app as it helps us continue going on a weekly basis, and we do love reading those reviews as well. If you want the show notes, you can find that below or with our previous guest at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. To watch the full video, search Uncommon Show on YouTube, and to keep up to date with behind the scenes and clips for the show, you can find us at Uncommon_show on Instagram. But until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.